Hello, Sina. How you doing, man? Good to see you
Hi, Kevin.
for the
Nice to
first
be with you.
time. Sina, I've been we've been chit-chatting back and forth for some time now, and you also know Zia from Iran. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it, but hopefully next time. I thought we could maybe also do some kind of panel discussion. But Sina, really great to have you here. Since I don't know much about you and my audience doesn't know much about you, do you want to introduce yourself, your background? You're also a business professor. Maybe you want to talk also about your BTC, the BitGuide, where you teach. Yeah,
Yeah, that.
welcome to the
Well,
show.
first, thanks a lot for inviting. Great to chat with you. So basically, with a colleague of mine, RK, we started BitGuide. I think it was early this year, where we basically thought there isn't enough, quality sources of information to teach Bitcoiners about the fundamentals. And personally, on my end, I felt that absorbing information in the Bitcoin spaces has become so difficult. Anything you search online, you basically first have to scour through, 100 links that are trying to shill you some nonsense or some other fake project or something. And then if you're lucky, at the end, you will find some piece of good information. So we thought there's a gap here for curating and collecting information. For example, everything that a Bitcoiner needs to know about the concept of money, right? That was something we started to record a course on, and then we expanded into other things. RK also has done a few technical ones about custody. Although we are a bit moving a bit slower than we like, because we have to live and attend to our fiat jobs, but we're moving along. So that's one thing. Other than that, I'm just watching what's happens in the Bitcoin world and having fun. These days, a lot of people are crying about the bear market and prices going down, and entertainment never ends. On my fiat job, yeah, I teach business, business professor, and that kind of gives me a nice overlap, because I love learning about business and economy, and it overlaps with money. So I'm basically trying to approach Bitcoin from the perspective of economics and money and what it means for the global macro economy, that kind of stuff. So yeah, and then I haven't been to Iran for a long time, like you. Not as long as you, but more than a decade, I think. And but I've been like, after I learned about Bitcoin, I started to reach out to other Bitcoiners in Iran and just figure out what's going on in the community. And so I've been in touch secondhand, basically, with what's happening there. And yeah, we were just waiting to see what happens with all the changes that are occurring at the same time, with what the Fed is doing, what Russia is doing, with the rumors about BRIC countries getting together and trying to make a new currency. All kinds of interesting things are happening. Iran is doing some great stuff with supporting mining and supporting usage of Bitcoin. So yeah, lots of interesting directions.
Yeah, we've had some several calls, talks with Zia and Marty Bent, even I think on a panel discussion. And I mean, I was, as I said previously, off the record, I was in Iran like last time, 1979, 1980, like 1 year after revolution. We went back with my dad to visit sort of my mom, because they were divorced. And but otherwise, I grew up over in Austria and United States, and I lost somehow total base or touch, with And I know a lot of Iranians who went back, you know, to visit the families, and they said, you know, it's weird. It's a weird feeling. Maybe you could share a little bit about your sentiments, your perception, your impressions. A lot of Iranians, friends I have, they say, you know, they went to visit friends, family in Iran. They said the feeling, you know, the whole perception has changed. It's like, is that true? Like, you know, I mean, I do remember, you know, I have like vivid pictures and memories. I just want to have like a general overview of your sentiments before we go like deep dive into Bitcoin.
Sentiment, it's such a broad thing, but one thing I can say is I already feel a difference in mindset, and I'm not sure if this was all there all the time or maybe I have changed or something. Although we have to understand, you know, what's going on in Iran. The economy isn't really functioning there because of a variety of reasons. And that also impacts people. So I feel like the general a sense of optimism doesn't really exist. And something that might link to crypto is you see a lot of people who are ready to believe stories and too eager to become rich too quickly. These things generally, at least in my limited experience, these things generally happen when you have desperation. So, and
And
then
on
a few
top of
other
that, sorry to
cultural.
interrupt you, on top of that, all the sanctions, embargoes that have been going on for decades now, right? I mean, the people, it's the people who've been suffering, like, right? On top of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have a great youth population, highly educated, lots of potential, but a non-functional economy, which means it doesn't create engaging jobs for all these people. And when you are, you know, you have lots of potential and you're not able to use it, you have hours and hours of free time, and you aren't earning commensurate with your skill level, then it causes lots of problems. You know, some people actually, it gets to some people's minds, and you kind of tend to do some weird stuff. And when you get sufficiently frustrated, you are much more likely to believe, you know, the next savior who comes along and wants to save you. So that's my general feeling. It's not, I'm sorry, it's not so positive. But yeah, there's this undercurrent of things just not working as they should, and you see this in many other countries too. Like in every other country that has suffered long-term economic troubles, you see optimism down, you see happiness metrics down, and this all causes all kinds of other psychological issues. But at the same time, you have a very active and smart and perceptive community of young folks who are punching above their weight. I am really, you know, initially I didn't have much of an expectation, but once I learned more about people and the crypto community, for example, every day I'm amazed to see such talent over there, which doesn't get the credit they deserve. Also, because of the political troubles between Iran and the Western country, we don't get enough of a recognition in the media, or even human rights organizations. It doesn't pay to really pay attention to Iran, right? Because they're also partly, you know, partly marketing organizations, right? So it just doesn't pay for them to reflect what's going on in Iran, or maybe even allocate some funds or other things. So it's like an underappreciated community, in my opinion. And you know, and they're doing amazing stuff. So that's something that needs more attention. And Maybe that's in the next podcast we can bring up a few of the more active folks in the community and talk about exactly what they see on the ground, and that should be really cool. Actually, a couple months ago, realizing that Iran isn't really getting the attention it deserves compared to the amount of work and effort and enthusiasm there is about crypto, I just wanted to write an article for Bitcoin Magazine to explain all of these. It's moving very slowly though, because I need someone who has firsthand observations. But I'm happy that you are interested in this.
Totally curious, yeah. So, Sina, I mean, I talked several times with Zia and some others about the demographics. You mentioned like lots of young people. I think I had this number like 60 to 70% of the population, of Iran's population, is approximate or below 30 years of age. Correct me if I'm wrong. I just wanted to, like, to find out, like what. I mean, they're definitely, extremely smart and educated, but are they hopeful? I mean, do they have a vision? Do they see, like, a bright future, rooted in Bitcoin? Is that because, yeah?
Well, in Bitcoin, I can see there is a lot less hype about Bitcoin. Like when you go to Bitcoin Twitter, you get, I don't know, maybe just roughly speaking, 90% of the stuff are hype and hyperbole and that kind of thing. You don't see that in Iran. So people are more kind of level-headed, if that's the right word. But what really bothers me is that shitcoins have a lot more of a reach. So because financial education is globally a challenge, right? But it's much bigger deal in Iran. So people, at least in my limited observation, they don't have the very basics of economic or monetary understanding, so they really fall for basically everything. I mean, it's not even like big shit coins. Like there are also locally grown shit coins, like the whatever singer or famous celebrity that people like in Iran, they come up with their own coin and it doesn't get enough criticism or actually find some people to follow. So that's a really concerning trend. You're already not so well off, and then you're also falling for these scams, which makes you suffer more. And I've tried a lot to basically shed some light on this and help, but there's just so much you can do when you're up against a whole machinery of marketing, and there's lots of money in shitcoins, right? You can't really go up against their marketing. So, but they have captured all the space. That's a big trouble. As far as hopeful about Bitcoin's future, what can I say? I think there is a general understanding about the challenges of fiat that's there, but maybe it needs to be more, there needs to be better education to differentiate good and bad money. But at least everyone knows in Iran that rial is bad money. So people at first hand know inflation because there's no way out of it, it's part of life.
What's the rate?
And
What's the hype? What do we have? Hype inflation? I mean, what kind of rate are we talking about? Like 40%, 50%? Like, what is it? Like, do you know? Or is it just fluctuating like
because
backwards?
they lie all the time, you never know, but you have to observe the numbers like 40, 50, 60. Easy, very easy. I think official numbers get close to 40%, but it's probably more. And I have completely lost my sense of prices. So like when these days somebody says this thing costs this much, I have no feeling of how much that is because all the numbers have changed. Like just thinking about it right now, I think the salary I was receiving 10 years ago, now there are people who receive 10 times that and they're still below poverty. So it's a fact of life, you know, inflation is there. And this generally though, there are some impacts due to, you know, economic mismanagement, but I guess a bigger piece of that is just they have no limits in expanding the money supply and do whatever they want. At least in the US, there are lots of eyes watching the system. So there is kind of some more discipline. But over there, it's free. It's a free field. You can do whatever you want. And all the time, as we see everywhere, when you give people total power over the money, it goes in one direction.
Yeah, that's I think that's the nature of fiat systems, huh? Or whatever centralized systems.
We just have bad and worse fiats.
Yeah. So, I would love to I got this article of, it's even on BTC Times. You know, it's a very short article about, you know, this new law, whatever you call it, the cryptocurrency law. It's not called Bitcoin. Like, Iran approves Bitcoin payments for imports. Have you read a little bit about this? Do you have more information about using Bitcoin for imports, for trading?
Yeah, so I looked it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Especially I looked up the actual source to make sure this is something legit, because you never know. So let me give you some background. Well, obviously, Iran has lots of trouble in exports, right? And with all the sanctions and SWIFT ban and all, it's become difficult for them to move dollars and basically export and things like that. So they are one of the more likely candidates to welcome a new system. Generally, like those who are doing well in the current fiat system, they are going to be the last to adopt any kind of a new arrangement. So particularly like Iran is an energy exporter, right? And when there is trouble in export, you have to find these weird mechanisms to be able to get paid for what you're sending out. For example, sometime they had these arrangements of oil for products. So they would export oil and immediately import some kind of products with it so that they don't have to move funds around. More recently, they have discovered that there is some potential in crypto. They are heavily exploring the space, not just Bitcoin, everything. And they're also investing on CBDCs. So they call it digital real or something like that. And this shows that they have this strong interest in that. That's unlike many other governments. So they're taking this thing very seriously. And I think they look at it as an opportunity to figure out how to export more products and all. So that's interesting. Specifically about what happened is, I think they had initially banned Bitcoin transactions through a combination of explicit bans as well as creating lots of uncertainty. So for a time, miners were kind of getting shut down and getting raided, and all the equipment would be seized because we have some energy troubles in hot months as well in many cities in Iran. They have no electricity in summer for maybe 1 or 2 hours every week or so, because there's demand is more than capacity. So in those times, it's understandable that they want to limit miners. But there has been so much fervor and interest in mining for such a long time that it turned into this underground industry. So they came down hard on it. But now what happens recently is they actually started clarifying the regulations. So what you were talking about is some I'm not sure what you would call it, but the administration put out a guideline that directs the agencies under that to treat mining and Bitcoin as basically legal activity. So you can actually get legal license for mining, and they would then control what kind of resources you're using, how much electricity you use, and then they give you the specific prices for that. You can't use regular electricity that is supplied to households because I believe the prices of those are all subsidized. So they control that. A lot of people use subsidized electricity, which is subsidies already a huge mistake, but then also allowing all kinds of other business activity to use that is a second second problem. And then there's just some aside. There's also a lot of institutions who have political connections that allow them to use free electricity. It's kind of an exemption from paying for that. And then all of them had also started extensive mining operations in their garages and basements and all. So sometimes even maybe the whole business wasn't really paying enough. You couldn't turn a profit in the actual business, but because of the free electricity, your mining operations would would keep you afloat. All these things, mess up with the energy infrastructure. So they kind of created this legal framework where you can legally operate and then get electricity and energy from the sources that they approve. They did the same thing for natural gas, right? I think natural gas also has limits in the winter, so you have to basically agree to shut down your miners in those times. But if you do that, you can mine legally. The only other limitation they put on is you still cannot use the mined Bitcoin for internal transactions. So they are creating this huge incentive for trying to import with that, with the Bitcoin. And if you think about it, that makes perfect sense. You're dealing with an economy that has trouble finding dollars. So there's a huge dollar shortage. They have trouble making international transactions. So if you, as a Bitcoin holder, try to use your Bitcoin to import some goods from wherever, maybe China, you have basically exported Iranian energy and you have imported some foreign product and you haven't used any dollar infrastructure, at least officially through Iran, because some people might send their Bitcoin to some offshore place to then turn it into some of the more common currencies. But still, that's a way to go around the troubles they have. So one thing I would say, it is very clear that the administration understands the potential and thinks of it as a way to get around the limitation that's put on them. If I'm right, that would mean some sustained and strong support for growth of this ecosystem, which is a very interesting development.
Yeah, you mentioned the legal framework for Bitcoin mining. Just two questions. First of all, if it's done I guess the Bitcoin miners get granted like a license, and do you know like how much fee or taxes or whatever goes away? Like how much do they have to pay, or to the state, to the government, to the agencies, or whoever? And then the other question was, if they do it, if they get caught illegally, what's the penalty?
So they see if you get caught, first of all, they do catch people, which is very interesting given how ineffective they are in other things. I don't know, maybe they cooperate with network providers as well as energy providers, and they have some pretty cool, pretty good, maybe machine learning, whatever they detect. And they're having people, because Iranian people are really savvy, right? So they will find ways. But in this case, any miner I've talked to, they had instances where their illegal operations were discovered. So that's one thing. Usually what happens is they seize all everything you have, and I don't know, then you have to go through a long, painful process of paying some fines and getting them back, or sometimes you can't even get back the equipment. I don't have any idea about what kind of fees they would charge or what kind of trouble they would create for you. But one thing that was clear in the announcement was that if you actually use your Bitcoin for exports, there's pretty strong tax exemptions that you have. When I was reading it, it really appeared that you are exempt from business taxes altogether. But generally, you also have, Iranian regulators are generally on the side of over-regulating everything. So you can expect some difficulty in going through the process and maybe some cost, but that's not preventing miners from expanding. They're actually thriving. I think some of the statistics are about 5% of the global mining is done in Iran, which, think about the maybe the size of the economy compared to the size of the economy, that seems very substantial. So, the ecosystem is growing a lot, and it's actually in this weird dance between population growing activities underground, as well as government trying to find some opportunities in the space while trying to control it sufficiently so that it doesn't kill their own currency, right? You always have this trouble. You want to use Bitcoin for international business where you have trouble, but it's kind of a Trojan horse too. It kills your own currency as well. Once people figure out that, oh my God, this thing actually appreciates nonstop compared to the local junk that we have, then you're done. You can't really control it anymore, right? So they have to kind of be very conservative and try to, have this laser micro approach to regulation. Only for these activities we allow crypto and Bitcoin, and not for the other activities. But I tend to think once you open the dam, you can't control it. One last thing I would say is they're also pushing this CBDC very hard, apparently. They're publishing papers on it. They have lots of government-sponsored discussions and explorations. I don't know where they're going with it. Maybe it's just curiosity, but there is some serious funding behind it. So,
Well, what's the intention in Iran when it comes to so-called CBDCs? Like, is it about as they literally say, the speaker of what do you call it, International Bank for International Settlements, absolute control? Like, is it about control, surveillance, controlling everything, or?
So I read a big document that they put out a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago. They said the exact same stuff, but more politically careful. One of the reasons they actually mentioned for going after CBDC was policy. All these Keynesian monetarist policies recommend central banks to play with the supply of money whenever they feel like it, frankly, because there's no way you can exactly know how much money there is and exactly know how much expansion is needed. So it's like a game of guessing, which is Federal Reserve does, right? The only trouble is you don't have total control over the currency that's circulating. you can try to inject some money into the banking system, but that has to find its way through the actual economy. If you want to force people to spend, right, you can play with the rates and some create some incentives, but that doesn't necessarily mean it ends up pushing people to spend, right? These guys want to have total power to force you to spend when you don't want to, right? Again, Keynesian nonsense. So that's one of the ideas, and it's really troubles central bankers because they see that they don't have that much control over people's spending habits. So, but if it's all digital, it's a you press a button, and you know people only have 2 weeks to buy stuff, and then you can even better. You can actually say what you can buy, right? You can say, you know, this thing is not allowed, so none of your cards would work for that. You can immediately ban everything. You know, you're dealing with an environment where the regulator has a huge list of things they want to ban, right? If they are able to control financial flows, it's as easy as pressing a button rather than trying to find a huge army of people going after this and that and who's using this and controlling. It's so difficult. But if you have control over financial flows, you don't even need to touch the real economy and real activities. You're just dealing with data and they love it. They should love it at least. So that's one thing. The other one that they mention is the cost of handling cash, which is a legitimate complaint. Cash is generally expensive for these for governments. You know, you have to replace the paper. I don't know, manage what's happened, and also using cash is not as ideal, harder thing to do, but we didn't have anything better than that for privacy previously, but now we do. So somewhat less of an objectionable rationale, but there was no mention in that report about the ability to increase surveillance, which is probably the number one goal, but it's not mentioned. So they're more careful about it. I guess in the US, we've heard a few explicit, from central bankers worldwide, we've heard explicitly that they like that control and observation. But they mostly, I guess, officially, they were mostly talking about the ability to implement policies better. What are those policies? Have they ever worked? Never. But they just want to have more freedom to implement those.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for all these explanations. So Sina, I mean, you said you were in Iran like 10 years ago, but I assume you from time to time you have friends, relatives, family, like, or you know, within Iran, or who travel back and forth. What do they report to, like, or do they tell, like, you know, do people like use mobile wallets? What's, you know, what do they use? I know Zia does a great and fantastic job like educating people. Unfortunately, my Farsi, my Iranian language is not so good, so I can't really follow up on what he's doing exactly, but he's doing great educational work for sure. When it comes to self-sovereignty, like, you know, would it be, you know, using mobile wallets, self-custody, hardware wallets, coin joining, transacting privately, privacy, is what's your like perspective, like what's going on in Iran when it comes to all these things?
To some extent, people are aware of the importance of privacy a bit more than you see in the Western population, because everything apparently, at least on the surface, works, and you don't suddenly get seized. Your bank account doesn't disappear that easily. But in Iran, like, people, a lot of people use Binance to trade crypto or buy or sell or things like that. And, you know, Binance sanctioned Iranian users. And some of them found suddenly that they can't access their money, and similar things also happen internally With higher frequency. So people are more aware of the fact that you need to think about privacy because for many of them, if the other party knows you're from Iran, it might not be a great thing to great you may run afoul of a bunch of regulations. You know, many businesses are not allowed to offer services to Iranian users, right? So for some of these reasons, basically Iranian people have more more urgent need to preserve privacy. And I do see Bitcoiners in Iran are very aware of these tools, and they have functioning, well-functioning communities where they share information. Like Ziad again is a great example. He's a powerful force for distributing information and educating folks about these things. And I can see there's a lively discussion and a very friendly community there helping each other. But Bitcoin only community is kind of small. And the majority of crypto enthusiasts are outside of Bitcoin. And those guys, the way I feel, it's more about a short-term trade and all other monies on exchanges and no attention to privacy and all that. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have better news for you, but I'm very, very proud of the Bitcoin community. They are they are actually a great source of information for me too. I mean, I go to them to ask questions rather than, you know, finding it's harder for me to find really good information even from my network in the US. So that part is good, but then the other part, like, you know, we can actually do a poll or something, but if I were to guess, like 95% of people who do altcoins, they have no understanding, no good understanding of privacy or CoinJoin or things like that.
Well, I know I have one cousin from my mother's side who lives and works in Germany and Europe, and I know, he's done also great. I mean, first of all, he's a total Bitcoiner, full node and everything, and I think he convinced a lot of people, especially within his family, to start saving, right? I think there was even a talk like selling real estate or whatever property they have and turn it into Bitcoin. So would you say like what percentage of Iran's population is like more or less like full Bitcoiners? Would you say like 1%, 2% or
I don't know. I have no idea.
it's hard to say, huh?
What I do know is there's a very active, probably like everywhere else, I guess, but there's a pretty active, a strong, and unfortunately successful group of, you know, shitcoin shills. Everyone has a shop that's selling some kind of a fake trading program that turns you from a poor guy to a rich guy overnight, or
Jesus, so much
yeah, these.
shitcoinery. Zia actually confirmed that in several talks. It's like there's so much shitcoinery going on in Iran. It's
Yeah, it's
mind-boggling.
oh my God, you know, initially when I got in touch with the community, like I had started out in Bitcoin maximalist toxic communities, and I took that mindset and went to Iranian chats. And I was constantly in fight with people. You know, I was talking a completely different language. And, you know, the guy shows up and talks about all these possibilities that blockchain opens up.
My God,
And
Jesus.
I'm telling him, hey, I've been following blockchain supply chain applications for more than 5 years. And this is my field. And I've never seen any real applications. What are you talking about? And you just couldn't get the message through. Because of so much, you know, they take these stories that shitcoiners put out there as truth. They completely believe the whole thing without much of research. I mean, again, not much different from the typical shitcoiners in other countries. But what is concerning is because possibly this could be a reason that there is less of an interaction for between people inside and outside. So they might have gotten into this bubble where they hear the same thing from all the businesses around them, which is a bad message, and they and Bitcoiner message doesn't get to them. So when your sources of information are all corrupted, what can you expect, you know? But still, again, my initial horrible experience got a lot more softened and nicer once I learned about Zia and everybody else who are in legitimate, knowledgeable, and serious Bitcoiners. So it's actually very, very interesting. And every time I'm locked down, Zia sends me a few examples of people creatively helping Bitcoin. And maybe there was this guy who went out and convinced a bunch of businesses to accept Bitcoin
Oh, really? Wait. Like
and put it on
merchants,
social
like
media.
bazaar people, like that. This is what I was gonna ask you.
Regular
Like,
people, like, like a hairstylist or I don't know, some other store, boomer type businesses, you know. And this is great again because there's no one who makes good money on Bitcoin in Iran, right? At least in the US, you have a bunch of businesses that make good money by just being Bitcoin only. But in Iran, money comes from shitcoin, right? So there's no one who is advocating for Bitcoin except people who are in love with it, right? Like it's a personal interest. And that was probably one of the reasons I also started that Telegram channel to put out some Bitcoin information and some discussions and analysis out there because I felt there's such a need. Some days I'm frustrated, some days I'm hopeful. It's a long-term game though. So I think if we keep at it, we can make a change. There's just so much potential in that space, and I hope the people find some easier opportunity to get in touch with the outside world and maybe even get involved with the Bitcoin economy more, find some jobs that don't really require you to physically be somewhere. Because technically speaking, like just thinking about the technical capabilities, I'm very, very bullish on how much of a skill or talent pool exists there. It's just other problems, including political challenges that prevent them from, you know, making an impact. And I think it will get resolved, but who knows when.
Before I want to ask you about, like your macro overview or perspective, like about BRICS, Russia, China, whatever, India, Iran, bilateral, multilateral treaties, the Silk, what do you call, what do you call, what's the belt,
Silk Road.
initiative. I mean, lots of investment money flowing back and forth,
Oh,
the
the Chinese
detachment from
money
the US
built.
dollar. I mean, I want to ask you about that and the final question, but before that, about tourism, because I hear a lot of people, everybody who goes to Iran is like, they just love it. The people are so friendly. They're, I mean, it's just Iranian hospitality and mentality. They're just so nice. Everybody's cooking and they just love Iran, And I thought, God, I mean, tourism could be a great, spot for, or what do you call it, marketing gap, for using Bitcoin, as soon as people realize, oh my God, this is, as you said, as you mentioned, previously, it's a deflationary money, it's appreciated in value. I mean, what do you wanna, trade or whatever, do commerce or business in shit coin or whatever, or fiat or real or whatever. So where do you see that going?
Well, the model I have in my head is for the last 6 or 7 decades or more, the dollar has become the bedrock of global finance. And some of that was because of the military power and political push, but the global dollar system has grown way beyond the US. So every other financial institution that might have had the choice to use any other currency gradually chose dollars because of the network effect. And generally, it's a lot easier for everyone to use the same thing, right? And then, like, the amount of dollars that are offshore and outside of the control of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. System is enormous. No one knows how much, but everyone knows it's several times more than the domestic dollars. So it's a gigantic global system. And I do know that there is conscious effort by China and maybe other countries to introduce something else. Actually, there are explicit mentions by Chinese officials that we want to introduce something that competes with the dollar. And this year, Russia also has strong incentives to adopt something else. Sanctioned countries, including Iran, they have a strong incentive. And so think about, like, China is one of the biggest exporters, one of the biggest importers. Russia, Iran, these oil countries. And I think Saudi Arabia is also a candidate to join this coalition. India as well. So if you put all these together, you probably have a critical mass of economic activity that can provide some potential for introduction of a new currency. However, it's going to be so much less efficient because, again, you're breaking a huge global network into two pieces, right? And then it becomes significantly less efficient. And also, what is the alternative, right? So if all of the, probably in that pack, the most powerful currency would probably be yuan. And it has its own troubles. Like, if you want to operate a global currency, first of all, your currency should be everywhere. You should be well distributed. Then you should have deep markets that are very, very liquid and open. Well, China doesn't have those. They want to have, like, tight control over the currency and capital flow. So it doesn't appear to, they, I think the way I think about it, they want to do it, right? But still, they don't find a good alternative. And my thinking is, like, there's a lot of discussion and there's a lot of money being made selling newsletters, telling people, oh, it's going to be next year or imminently happening. I'm just more skeptical because this is a lot more than wanting. You need probably maybe a decade of work before some alternative currency could work. And who knows, maybe by that point, Bitcoin is big enough to capture a huge market share from the dollar. So, I mean, if you adopt Chinese fiat, how is it much better than adopting the dollar? You're still, beholden to the operator of that currency. For all the things that can happen with the dollar can also happen with the Chinese yuan. So I'm not sure that if it's actually be much of a step up. But at least something neutral like Bitcoin, with that, you can be confident that this thing is not going to be controlled by anyone. So you will never lose access, for example, which is going to be hugely important for these countries. Although the big problem with Bitcoin is it's so small, it doesn't have the capacity for now to support international business. But I'm so excited about what's happening in Iran. If it actually gains some momentum and some real business activity, international business activity happens with Bitcoin, it will probably be the first time, a government is seriously using Bitcoin as a settlement system for their trade. So if that's the case, if a few other countries also do this, then you have a huge amount of deep-pocketed institutions that now need to hold Bitcoin as a means to transact. And that's how, a snowball effect starts. So I'm very excited about that. And I'm just looking to see how much of real effect follows after this regulation is announced. Initially, I was very skeptical, right? But when I actually read the directives, my feeling is this is a serious effort. So Yeah, we'll see.
Oh, that's great that you have, I mean, you can read and write or understand parts because I can't. But that's great if you can, like, go to the sources, to the that's really amazing, that's really valuable. You can verify it. Don't trust, verify.
Oh.
It's amazing. So where do you see, I mean, you partially already answered a lot of questions, like, which I wanted to ask. Do you see like a gradual and sudden process, hyperinflation, or whatever chronological consequential events do you see, like recession, depression, or sudden hyperinflation? I mean, like globally, like do you see like the pain point reaching a tipping point in the next couple of years, or I don't know, what's your perspective for Bitcoin, for the sake of Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, it's always challenging to predict. But a few things I would mention is generally the global financial system is not working. If you look at the GDP growth after 08, prior to 08, it's been growing exponentially. If you just look at the global GDP or US GDP, it's been growing super, super fast. But right after 08, it hit a wall. And it fell off trend, and it's growing at a much slower pace. Central bankers and these media economists always celebrate growth, but this growth is a lot lower than the trend. And with every disruption that happens, with every depression, recession that happens, you fall into another slump where your growth is even slower than before. So right after COVID, we are actually now growing a lot slower than we were before COVID. We hardly even gain back anything close to the prior job levels. I don't think, yeah, we actually at this point have fewer people working than prior to the pandemic. And same thing, GDP is also growing at a slower pace than before, which was still very low. Compared to the pre-08. So there are structural problems that are not being addressed. And if they get hidden whenever you have a bull market, when everything grows and credit grows. So for some years things look good, but ultimately you see w something breaking and causing the whole system to crumble. And I expect these events to become a lot more frequent because now, cross-border capital estimates that we have $350 trillion of debt out there, and the whole global economy is 100 trillion. So debt is three times more than the economy. So as we have grown, as the global economy has grown, we have basically expanded credit to really unsustainable levels. And we have a very fragile financial system that is only waiting for a strong blow to break apart.
Right.
And these things happen every few years, like the issues we have with COVID. Also, it's interesting that even if COVID didn't happen, there would be sufficient reasons for us to get into a serious trouble. There was signs of recession before that as well. And these things will happen from now on, every few years, and probably every time stronger than before. And central bankers always resort to the regular playbook of quantitative easing and dropping rates. And who knows, maybe they try to improve their effectiveness through the use of CBDCs and all. But because they are so bureaucratic that they don't try to do some real research into what's wrong in the global economy, they will only create more trouble. Like last year, they expanded credit so much. So some of that credit actually ended up in the real economy and created some positive, but most of it ended up turning into speculation. And pumped as asset prices and created more trouble down the road. So it will basically be like every time we have a recession, they will come back with a bazooka. They will inject credit everywhere. That's going to create a lot of people, a lot of new rich folks. And then the aftermath of that is inflation, which creates a lot of poor folks. And exceedingly, these two groups will be different. And on top of that, connecting this to Bitcoin, right now we are in this huge deflationary environment. Like people always mistake, they think because like energy is getting more expensive, Bitcoin should also grow. But actually, when you think about credit, we are in a deflationary environment this year. That's why Bitcoin is down. It will only take a change in the credit environment, probably sometime next year, to cause a new bull run for all the assets that are doing really bad right now. So underlying, if you don't think about the midterm fluctuation, Bitcoin is constantly growing. The network has never stopped growing. And because of its features, it will always be on the balance, on average, growing versus the fiat. And the more this happens, the more people realize that this is happening. And the more people jump on board as a result, the stronger the growth will be. So I see central bankers just keep playing this game of changing the money supply and always to the side of expansion. So there's a huge expansion and a little bit of contraction, which causes a huge breakdown in the system. Then they go back to that huge expansions again, right? So ultimately, on the balance, it's always in one direction. And Bitcoin will keep gaining market share, market cap. So, and I don't see any way this would play otherwise. And when that happens, like I said, the only problem for Bitcoin to become a global money is its size. And one way to think about it is its salability. Like there are not many institutions, not many countries, not many counterparties who would accept Bitcoin. You need it to be kind of a well-distributed, well-accepted medium of exchange around the world for you to be able to do some serious transactions with it. This will happen with time because so far it has constantly and exponentially grown. And as long as fiat is as horrible as it is, it will keep growing until it reaches that point beyond which it is a viable means of international trade. Like right now, if I know that when I travel to another country, there will be other businesses that accept my Bitcoin, I have no other reason to keep any other nonsense fiats than I have to go through banks. I have to, I don't know, think about exchange rates. I have to probably worry about fees. My credit card needs to work with the other network that's in that other country. It's a very bad experience. And it only survives because we don't have any other alternative, and there's kind of a governmental monopoly over that, right? But now we do have an alternative. It's just too small right now.
Right, exactly. Final question. You probably heard about Samson Mao, CEO of Gen3, whose mission is hyper-Bitcoinization. They're doing great work, together with the investors, Max Keiser, Stacy Herbert, a lot of other people, and El Salvador. What's your take? What do you think about El Salvador if it could lead by example, like, a real prosperous abundance of economies, of hyper-Bitcoinized economy, Bitcoin city, maybe even, eventually it will become the unit of account. I mean, do you see like small countries like El Salvador, following the into the footsteps of El Salvador, and that would sort of trigger the hyper-Bitcoinization process
Yeah,
globally?
I mean, going back to the model I was explaining previously, like you have a bunch of countries that are the core beneficiaries of the fiat, right? But on the fringes, you have other folks who are not benefiting, right? Either intentionally being put aside or their own currency is so non-functional that they need to find an alternative. So they're forced to find an alternative, right? Generally, governments don't want to change anything that's working. So there are several of these smaller players that are at the fringes of the fiat sphere, so to speak. These have strong incentives actually to adopt a new currency. Again, like I said, there are right now, it's not that viable. not that easy to adopt Bitcoin. And already, I mean, with all these fluctuations, I can imagine a lot of people are not super excited about Bitcoin in El Salvador. Initially, I was like so excited, I was crying at hearing the news because, you know, this was the first thing. Just 1 year before that, we were all telling all these non-believers that, you know, there would be countries using this thing, and someday, you know, this is a dream. But at that point, you know, within a couple minutes after Jack Mallers was announcing it, it became a reality. However, I was looking for some statistics and some data on real changes that Bitcoin has created in El Salvador, at least not having done a serious deep research, but just reading every kind of news piece that comes after.
This one.
I'm still waiting for seeing some actual change. The one thing I will mention is they announced one day that I think their tourism grew by 30% or something in 2021. So that's positive. Adoption of Bitcoin has probably had some effect on. Are we? I got a error message on Zoom.
Then I
So yeah, it probably had some effect on basically elevating the name of the country. You know, more people now know about it. The same effect that Michael Saylor benefited from. You know, he said after we adopted Bitcoin, everybody knows about MicroStrategy, right? So that's one thing. But honestly, I'm still looking for some concrete evidence that some real change is happening. But it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Maybe not at the time where we have a global downturn and everybody's doing badly. But I'm also hoping for internal economics in El Salvador to not go really sour because their bonds are not doing really well right now. So internally they have problems, and we need this experiment to work.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, that was a fascinating conversation, Sina. We need to repeat this and stay in touch, and hope we can do this. Whoever, you know, maybe a panel with CEO, other Iranians, or you know, or people, Bitcoiners in general. But hey, thanks so much for, you know, for I learned a lot, my listeners too. So, do you want to like share where people can find you, or?
Yeah, so sorry if I rambled a little bit.
No, it
As
was
a
amazing. Loved it.
for the first episode, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So if you want to follow a Bit Guide, first of all, you can find my account on Twitter. It's at Sina underline Bit Guide, so Sina underline Bit Guide, and then you can also follow BitGuide underline IO. We also have a website where what would be interesting for a Bitcoiner there is video courses about the economics and technical side of Bitcoin. We are still expanding those, but already we have a couple of courses, like hour-long videos that go deep in you know, the concept of money, history of fiat.
Austrian economics principles, like
What's
two
that?
Austrian economics, like you know, like Soviet economics stuff.
Yeah, I still haven't started that one, but that's part of our program. Yeah. So for now, like I'm in charge of the economics series, and RK is doing the technical side. Economics series covers starts from the concept of money, then history of fiat, pre history of money, pre-fiat and after fiat, and then the next one would be Austrian economics and things like that. So we are
Oh, fantastic.
developing that. Be sure to check that out. I also have, like, for those who are Persians or understand Farsi, I also run a Farsi Telegram channel where, again, it's a place for me to ramble about Bitcoin and maybe react to some news events and maybe
Great.
discredit a bunch of folks who say nonsense stuff, or maybe and put some context, especially economic context, to what's happening.
Yeah.
You can find all that through the website as well.
I'll put those all in the show notes. It's amazing. I mean, it's just so crazy how much educational work needs to be done. It's really necessary. It's, beginning with the question of what is money? Or, people even in universities, they just don't, it's just awesome economics, or it's like maybe you hear it once or twice.
It's a constant academic propaganda
Totally.
where certain ideas are like universal truths and they're not even challenged at all. One other thing I would say, like confirming what you said about the need for education, like when I tell my students to go research, sometimes I give them projects and some people choose to do crypto related research and I let them do it. Once they come back, generally I see that a lot of the stories and marketing campaign done by these fake projects end up entering their presentation. So what happens is you go online, you look for a bunch of resources, and like I said, the first 500 results that you receive in a through a search engine are sponsored content by people who are not incentivized to provide the good information. So you simply get lost in all those distractions basically. And it's so huge that signal is completely lost for a noob, for a person who enters the space recently. It's like everyone has that couple years of getting lost in the noise before they finally find their path.
It's
So
real.
maybe hopefully we can influence this a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, you're doing really God's work, Satoshi's work. So thanks so much, Sina, for this amazing conversation. Let's keep in touch and hope we can repeat this sometime in the near future together with
Thank you very much. I
whoever.
really enjoyed that conversation. Looking
Sina, thank
forward
you so
to
much.
do
All
it
right,
again.
talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Bye. All right, guys, that was amazing. I really enjoyed this. So make sure you follow Sina on Twitter, and there are a lot of conferences coming up. Probably I can only make it to one that's in Austria, in Innsbruck, in Austria. A pretty big, like the biggest Bitcoin conference in the German-speaking countries. Gonna be a lot of prominent Bitcoiners, but if you can attend one of them, in Lugano, I think it's the Bitcoin event with all the Bitcoin legends, beginning with Samson Mao, Adam Back, Nick Szabo. I mean, just amazing list of people. So yeah, thanks so much again for share this episode with your friends and family, and if you can, value for value. You can also listen on it on YouTube, podcast platforms, Fountain, Breeze, if you want to, spend some sats or, donate some sats. And yeah, thanks a lot again, and I'll talk to you soon again. I'll see you soon.